You are listening to the first of two News Project podcasts for the week of April 6, 2020, brought to you by GNAT TV. This podcast brings you these stories. Maintaining mental health during COVID-19. CSA opens for farm fresh food. Arlington Select Board readies for a potential wave of delinquent tax challenges. Yoga in the COVID-19 world. And Zoom and government meetings.
As the abrupt and unexpected changes in normal routines of life, driven by the coronavirus pandemic, have gathered force over the past month, such as the social distancing, the stay-at-home directives, the concerns about avoiding contracting the virus, it would not be surprising, one would think, that stress and anxiety levels are rising, and not only among those who are already suffering from depression or some other mental condition. We had a chance to talk with Laurie Zeef, a therapist based in Manchester with Elm Counseling, and she shared with us some of her thoughts and observations about how the new normal may be affecting people.
You know, I think it's, as we might expect, a big issue is people feeling isolated and feeling like they are having a hard time connecting. The Zoom thing, you know, people are doing sort of cocktail parties and meetings and things with Zoom and other platforms. Even in counseling, we're, I think most of us are using something called Doxy, D-O-X-Y, which is a HIPAA compliant format. And I think it works pretty well, I guess better than I might have thought. You know, it's sort of all we have, but we're not seeing people stop counseling or therapy by and large. Some people have sort of decided to drop out for a bit, but if anything, we're seeing more people join in. And I think partly because they're feeling so socially isolated. And of course, we've got the fear of the unknown, which for all of us is a big deal. I guess one of the interesting things that I've seen is completely not scientific, but anecdotally, is that some people who had struggled with anxiety in the past, who have sort of a generalized anxiety disorder, on some level maybe are managing it better than some of the people for whom it's a new thing. I don't know, something I've just kind of noticed. And maybe that's for people who typically don't struggle with a lot of anxiety, the lack of control that we're all experiencing and the lack of understanding of what the future looks like is very new to them. And so that's kind of, you know, a new challenge to work through.
I was wondering if there might be some people who are sort of seeing this as an opportunity to kind of make some changes in the way they go about life. You know, maybe it's addiction questions, or maybe it's something else where they're saying, you know, this is a signal or a moment where I really have to kind of get my act together here, and you know, otherwise I'll get blown away by this.
Yeah, so I think the people that manage it best are often people who can see it as, right, an opportunity. And one of those things that we encourage people to think about is, you know, what does this tell us about changes we might want to make personally in our homes, in our communities, in our world? Certainly politics, at least in my house, comes up a lot. You know, volunteering, you know, thinking about the huge increase in numbers of people who are using our food cupboards, and how we can, you know, help that. Thinking about our small businesses and really wanting them to be there when this is over with, and how we can help that. So I think when we can have a sense of that's something we can control, that's something we can do, it's sort of forward movement, I think that that's helpful. And then another thing I've really been talking to a lot of people about is thinking about, right, how can this end up, how can you end up looking back and not seeing this as just a loss of, I don't know for how long it will be, I hesitate to say 3 months, but let's say 3 months, And how can we look at that instead as an opportunity? So think about learning to play an instrument, learning a language, reading a series of books that you've always wanted to do, reading the classics, learning a craft, taking a craft that you already know and really using the time to do something with it. And of course, because of the timing of this and the nature of this event, I think gardening is, you know, we're hearing a lot about people using the opportunity to put in a garden, change a garden, make a garden bigger. And that, of course, gives us both a sense of accomplishment and also food, which is suddenly high on the forefront of a lot of our minds. Day to day, really, normally our lives have a lot of structure, and now sort of very suddenly for a lot of us, there's no structure. So we really talk a lot about keeping structure in, you know, get up, take a shower, get dressed, at least 30 minutes a day of cardiovascular activity. We're fortunate here that we live in a place where most people have an area that they can get outside and still be socially isolated. You know, eat well, sleep well, self-care. And it's one of these things where if you were sick or your child was sick and you were home for a day or a couple of days, you might stay in your pajamas all day and kind of, you know, let things go, binge watch TV, whatever. But if any of us do that day in, day out, we're not going to feel super good. So that's where when someone's suddenly experiencing a sense of anxiety or depression, we were saying, you know, so what time are you going to bed? What time are you getting up? What does your day look like? And honestly, if anyone stays in their pajamas and binge watches TV days on end, you're going to feel depressed. So let's you know, start to change some of those things and get people back on track with some sense of structure around their time. Typically they'll feel better. And we know for sure that exercise, real cardiovascular activity, at least 30 minutes a day, you know, we've got a lot of studies that show us that helps depression and anxiety. And if you're not someone who has previously struggled with depression and anxiety, that might be some, you know, new information for you that might be helpful.
So this might well be a good time to take that deep dive into an interest or hobby that's been long deferred. If you don't find yourself busier than ever between work and home commitments, maybe some problems really are opportunities in disguise. Now is certainly a good chance to test that theory. For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. A new community-supported agriculture program, or CSA, is up and running in Dorset in response to the coronavirus outbreak. It's intended to help local farmers and customers continue to connect while the crisis still limits normal social and business interactions. The CSA had its opening day on Wednesday, April 1st, and plans are for the curbside pickup point at the J.K. Adams parking lot to be open Wednesday afternoons from 3 to 5 p.m. 61 boxes of food were sold that first day, and they're planning on selling 125 in coming weeks. Customers can sign up for a box of vegetables for $40 or a box of veggies and meats for $55. Liz Ruffa and Mara Hurst, local food advocates, were the organizers of the CSA, and they described how it came about.
So Mara and I came up with this idea because we had, this winter at Merck Forest, we hosted 3 food shed forums, and we got all of the Meadowy and Northshire producers together to find out how their businesses were going and to see what we might be able to do in terms of getting resources and capacity together to help them grow their businesses. And marketing and distribution came up, I would say, as the top 2 needs. When the COVID-19 situation started permeating through our region, all of a sudden we realized that we had this mobilized group, and that increasingly people were needing, for a variety of reasons, to distance themselves from small businesses. And farms are also such vital small businesses here, but they're distant. There's a distance issue. And so we thought to ourselves, maybe what we could do would be to float the idea to our farmers as to whether they might be able to do a bundled CSA box program together where we would find the customers and then we would put together a combination of their products to meet the customers' needs.
And the idea really is to promote these farms that have great products. They're still doing what they do, and in a time when it's hard to get to the grocery store or not comfortable, there's great local food options as backup or as the forefront of our options. So we want to really promote those businesses and what they're already doing and make it a convenient and safe and easy way to get that local product. We are doing all pre-order. Paying will be at the time of pickup with check and credit card only. But we are requesting a pre-order so that we know how much product we need to get in from the farmers.
Mm-hmm. And this first week we did as a pilot to see if it would work. We wanted, so we put together the idea and we invited a few local community groups to help us promote it. It certainly wasn't by invitation only, but it was a more targeted, let's see if there's interest here. And we're delighted that we thought if we got 50 boxes sold, that would be wonderful, and we have 61 going out. So that's shows us that there's need and interest. And so now we'll be looking to figure out how we can expand our marketing to them.
But we're also, we've been in communication with the Dorset Farmers Market to make sure that we're supplementing and just enhancing existing markets rather than compete. So we're hoping that as this moves on, we'll just be more and more melded with existing programs like the Farmers Market.
The action was busy on the first day, with a steady stream of cars flowing through the Someday Farm stand at J.K. Adams. Participating farms and food businesses include Black Rose Creamery of Rupert, Dorset Daughters Soap of Dorset, Dutton Farm Stand of Manchester, Evening Song Farm of Shrewsbury, Larson Farm of Wells, Meadowy Valley Maple of Rupert, Merck Forest and Farmland Center of Rupert, Naga Bakehouse of Middletown Springs, and Tollcat Coffee of Dorset. Collectively, they're offering vegetables, greens, dried beans, herbs, fruit, dairy items, tortillas, bread, cheese, meats, and essential pantry items to customers on a weekly basis. Other products will include locally roasted coffee, pasteurized milk, organic maple syrup, and locally made soap to start. Orders can be placed by sending an email to northshiregrown@gmail.com. For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
When the taxes come in, they go out in September, the bills go out, and they're due in November. We historically borrow in anticipation of taxes, and you know, the last month and a half of the year, 2 months of the year, is when we get our money. Two things we need to be cognizant of this year is the economic downturn is likely to have a dramatic effect on delinquent taxes. How much is the question? So my thinking and Keith's thinking is we should be very cautious of making unnecessary expenditures. Now, however we define that going forward, that's different. But a couple of different things came to mind as big ticket items. It could be double what it normally is. So if normal tax delinquencies are 100, 125, it could be double that. And by virtue of state law, the school gets 100% of their funds first, and the town literally absorbs all the delinquencies. So it's not even a choice. That's the law. So we have to allow for either double, or I would say double just as an estimate, of what those delinquencies may be. But we don't want to get to November to be thinking about it. We want to be thinking about that now. And two or three big ticket items that I think we could defer with reasonable certainty would be the town truck that we were going to purchase this year. That's $100,000 right there. The fire truck is nowhere near ready to be built or ordered. So, you know, that, other than the greater loader fund that we're borrowing from now, if we needed to borrow additional monies from that, that would be the next choice. They're all going to get paid back when the taxes come in, but they may be slow coming in some of that money. So the other item, it's not a huge number, but we could probably do without it, is the town audit. outside audit. We do have a CPA now on the board of auditors, the in-house auditors, and I've talked with her at length on a number of things, and she seems very, very knowledgeable, and I think we could probably, we would be doing 18 and 17, 18, 19. I think we could just defer it 1 year and do it next year, do it in 2021, and we'd be doing it for 19. So it's the last 3 years. But those are three big ticket spending issues that I think we could probably, there may be others that may be what we need to do, but I don't think we want to take away from something that's urgent. I think we want to just be cautious. It's not panic, it's just caution.
As the COVID-19 crisis has tightened its grip around Vermont and the entire country, public meetings of all kinds were canceled, postponed, or restructured into online remote meetings. Those included local government meetings, like select boards, planning commissions, school boards, and the like. A few weeks into the coronavirus crisis, those boards have by and large now shifted their meetings completely online, like so many other organizations have been forced to. Meeting remotely can create a different dynamic to the traditional version, where everyone is physically present in the same room. One of the first select boards in our area to hold a meeting on Zoom, an online meeting platform that has seen an exponential growth in its use over the past month or so, was the town of Weston's, which met and recorded their meeting of March 24th, a few weeks ago. We asked Jim Linville, the vice chairman of the board, and Charles Tim Goodwin, to describe the experience of the different format.
I gotta say, the meeting went better than I expected it to. And Tim is absolutely right. It went faster. And if you think that's a good thing, that was a definite outcome.
I guess I was just wanting the opportunity for the public to kind of be involved. Is still there, but different. I mean, if we go on for, you know, another month or so, or whatever, with remote meetings, is there a way you see the public sort of, you know, logging into the meeting and taking part, or is it going to be less interaction with the public than you'd normally have at a meeting, you know, at the town hall?
I'll take a crack at that because of the church services. Because yesterday at a church service, we had 43 people. And I think, you know, the town has a website. We have one person who's a regular public attendee of our meetings. And, you know, we know who he is, and we give him a phone number. I think he's had a phone number and hadn't used it yet, but that doesn't mean he wouldn't. I don't think we'd want to put a password. Certainly wouldn't want to put a password on the town website, but on the other hand, we could invite people to send an email to the town clerk so that the town clerk, who, as Jim noted, is also now working part-time as the select board administrative assistant, send their emails to her, and I think they could attend a meeting just as people did a church service yesterday, couldn't they, Jim?
Either the Zoom address or a phone number that people could call to get into the meeting. That was in the warning of the meeting. And I actually called the person that Tim was talking about and, you know, explained how the Zoom meeting was going to work and that he could call in, and he chose not to. I don't think he felt like he was being excluded at all. He did have some concern about the open meeting law, and we did too. But in situations like this, I don't know exactly how to put it, but you know, I think we're a little bit in Good Samaritan law territory here. We're just bumbling around doing the best we can in a situation where we have conflicting imperatives. On the one hand, we're supposed to have open meetings that everybody, you know, in a physical location where everybody can show up. On the other hand, we have sheltering in place guidelines or rules or laws, depending on how you interpret this stuff. And a lot of the stuff is contradictory. And so you're left simply doing the best you can.
While Zoom or other online platforms may be adequate substitutes, while social distancing and other measures designed to combat the spread of the coronavirus need to be in place, there are issues presented around open meeting laws, cybersecurity, especially on Zoom, which has drawn concerns for a loophole that potentially enables people to crash or Zoom bomb the meeting, as happened recently in Montpelier, when a meeting of the Senate Agricultural Committee had to be aborted. Archiving those meetings for future historical reference is also a concern. So we talked with Karen Horn, the Vermont League of Cities and Towns Director of Public Policy and Advocacy, about those concerns to see what their takeaway was.
The League of Cities and Towns just put up on our COVID-19 webpage a remote meeting guidance. So you can go there. We're at vlct.org, and there's a COVID-19 page. And then if you click on that, there are really a slew of different topics that we're discussing in the context of COVID-19, frequently asked questions and recommendations.
So the meetings have to be recorded and archived then. So if someone from the public wants to watch.
Well, you know, that's really interesting because it doesn't speak to archiving. It speaks to recording. But what the town is required to do is record it. So I think what you find with a lot of the legislation that's happening right now is that people wanted to get the authority out there to continue to function, but there hasn't been a whole lot of time to sort of look at the details, you know? I do know that at the legislature, after they had that episode with Senate Agriculture, they actually locked down their meetings. And so if you were being called to testify to the remote meeting, you had to tell them, okay, I'm ready to come in now, and they would unlock it, let you in, and then I believe lock it down again. I'm not an IT person, so I don't know all the details of that, but it's definitely an issue, and cybersecurity was really an issue for local officials even before this. It was something that was being talked about in the legislature. And at the local level, what can we do to protect towns from, you know, phishing and all of those kinds of things?
We also recorded an interview with James Condos, Vermont's Secretary of State, on what he viewed as the issues he had with migrating, for the short term at least, public meetings online. We'll be presenting that discussion separately, so stay tuned for that. For now, and for the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. Yoga studios have been forced to make adjustments to the normal way they do business, just like many other businesses have. Instead of practicing on the mat in the studio, they have been connecting with their customers online, through Skype or Zoom or other online platforms, to not only keep the connection going, but to give their patrons a way to feel a sense of normalcy during unusual times.
Soles of the feet together, knees out. Focusing on dropping into the gap between the inhale and the exhale, and the exhale and the inhale. That is the place where pure consciousness resides. That is the place where the mind slows down, where the mind goes blank.
We talked with Joe and Bob afterwards and about how it's all going.
True self in the gap.
Actually, pretty user-friendly. Even people that are technically challenged have been finding that they can access the live stream classes with very easily. And basically, people need to, the company or the software is called Zoom. So many people are using it now, Zoom. And if you're going to do it on your iPhone or your tablet, you download the app. If you're going to do it on your computer, you go to zoom.us and you download the program. And then we send out a link to each class a half hour before it happens. So basically, we created a schedule. We have 20 classes on the schedule. We have, or maybe it's, I think it's 20 on the schedule. We have 2 to 4 each day. Most days have 3. And we each day there's a variety of classes, so from meditative flow to a flow to a more powerful practice. So there's really something for everyone, whether you have little or lots of yoga experience. No, so basically what people do is you just go to our website that our existing customers are used to doing. Otherwise, anybody who is interested goes to our website and clicks on the schedule and enrolls for a class. And when you enroll for the class, you're prompted to, well, it's included in our monthly membership. We have quite a few existing clients that have month-long or 3-month or 6-month or year-long memberships. So the Zoom classes, the live stream classes are included in their membership. And if you don't have a membership, then you can purchase a single class for $7 or 5 classes for $30 or 10 for $50. We also have gift certificates available. So it's something that if you wanted to gift somebody or family member or friend yoga, that's also doable for purchase online. And Bob and I co-teach the classes. Basically, we take turns teaching the classes, with one of us teaching and the other person demonstrating the postures and whatever's going on in the class. So the two of us are there. We've been doing it in our home. Our dogs sometimes come in and out of the camera. We've been doing it in front of our fireplace since it's still winter up here in Vermont. So if Bob teaches the class, then he's up by the computer doing all the verbal instruction. We're using lots of verbal cues so people don't have to look at the their computer or their phone or their tablet to see what the other person, in this case, if Bob's teaching the class, I would be doing the actual pose that he's instructing.
Lisa Kelly is the owner of Zen Revolution, a yoga and bike studio located in Manchester. In a phone interview, she told us about how she's adjusting to the new reality imposed by the COVID-19 virus.
You know, I think it's two-part. I think people are looking for something to do at home, but also just really missing the connection of the community of each of these, you know, studios. And I think I recognize that, you know, the people that have walked in the doors for the last 3 years, you know, they really miss the connection. I mean, I think the workout and the, you know, what classes are being offered, you know, it's important. But, you know, I think they want to see the teachers. They want to see the people that they've shared time and space with the last few years. And, you know, that community piece is such a big part of this. And, you know, in today's world of technology, you know, I think we're lucky that, you know, we're seeing, you know, online classes available. So, I mean, is it the same? No, but is it a really nice option? Absolutely. So, you know, I just started this past week and slowly building. You know, I have a yin yoga class every other night. My friend Nancy Wise, is, you know, she's a teacher at the studio. She's offering something, you know, tonight and Sunday. And I have to get into a regular, now that we've kind of seen that this is going to be a little bit of time, you know, I need to come up with a regular schedule, I think. You know, as a teacher, it's, you know, I think it's just nice to know that you have, you know, the other night I had 12 people, last night I had 8 people, and just to know that you're trying to do something.
Larissa Hall Carlson has been leading classes on mindfulness and meditation at the Manchester Community Library over the past several weeks. But with the library building closed to the public, she's taking her next class, scheduled for April 13th, online also. She spoke with us about how she's adapting and the value of a mindfulness approach during this time.
That's the practice of mindfulness, is to be able to be with truth, be with the current state of reality, and to befriend it. The beautiful thing about reality is that it is always changing. So everything is impermanent. The pleasant and the unpleasant feelings and emotions are going to change. Everything changes and shifts. And mindfulness practice helps us to find equanimity and to be able to stay centered and grounded and at ease with the chaos and the sweetness together. So it's an absolutely perfect time to be exploring mindfulness practices to support mental and emotional health and wellness and stability. I've been teaching online for many years, and so I've created many resources that are free and available to folks. So going to my website, larissacarlson.com, you'll find a great number of mindfulness practices, meditation practices, breathing practices, and even yoga practices that are free and available on my website, and that's growing. I'm recording more every day. I also have lots of online articles which have links to videos and audio practices that are wonderful to read on mindfulness and self-care practices, healthy eating, diet, seasonal practices, Ayurveda, and yoga. Additionally, folks who are interested in doing more study while being at home might be interested in some of the online courses that I've created over the years, including a 10-day Mindfulness for Caregivers course, which can be helpful for nurses, doctors, people working in hospice, anyone taking care of someone. You can find that on Insight Timer. I have a 10-day breathwork course or pranayama course also on Insight Timer. And that's one of my favorite ways of settling the mind and preparing for a smooth meditation. So there is an abundance of opportunity to practice for free and to study from home. And I encourage folks to take advantage of this time at home to really clear the slate of what's no longer necessary, you know, breaking habits that weren't supportive or wholesome, and to cultivate wholesome states, wholesome practices, wholesome hobbies, so that we can all come out of this together feeling better.
Serenity and calmness are helpful at all times, and especially now. There are resources you can find in each of their websites, at Heart of the Village, Zen Revolution, and at Larissa Carlson's website, if you feel in the need. For the GNet TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.com.